This time of year, weekly crop reports keep us up to date with the corn and soybean harvest, and the combines in the fields are hard to miss. Today, we'll talk about Iowa crops that are a little harder to see. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Kathleen Dellett, Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist, will be here. We'll talk about Iowa's organic crops this year and how the harvest is going. We'll also get a preview of the 14th Annual Iowa Organic Conference. Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here, and he and Kathleen will answer your questions about your yard and garden. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. But before we get to that conversation, I want to take just a moment to say thank you to you. We just wrapped up our fall membership drive this morning at 9 o'clock. It was a tremendous success. We heard from more than 3,000 individuals who made contributions to Iowa Public Radio. We raised over $230,000. Thank you so much for doing your part. You really do make Iowa Public Radio what it is, and the future looks very bright thanks to you. So thank you so much for being a part of it. If you missed out, of course, you can still go online to iowapublicradio.org. Now, back to Horticulture Day. This time of year, the combines are all over the place, and we get to stay up to date with the corn and soybean harvest every week with the weekly crop reports. But the harvest season for many other Iowa crops is much longer. This hour, we're going to talk about some of Iowa's other harvests, and we'll also get a preview of the 14th Annual Iowa Organic Conference. And of course, we'll also be answering your questions this hour. With me right now is Kathleen Dellett. She is Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist. Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Charity. Congrats on your fundraising.
Oh, thank you very much. And thank you so much for being here today. And, you know, I know that a lot of farmers in Iowa, growers in Iowa, have a much larger diversity of crops than we've had in this state in the past, or at least in the recent past. When we talk about harvest season, when we're looking at those growers, that's kind of a misnomer, isn't it?
True. Fortunately or unfortunately, I work with both corn and soybean growers and vegetable growers, so I can talk on the impacts of the season on both sets of crops.
Well, and of course, we can have organic corn and organic soybeans. I realize that they're crops that can be grown in organic ways as well. But let's talk a little bit about some of the more unusual, more diverse kinds of crops. I mean, when we're talking about these different crops, the season can affect so many different crops in so many different ways. Is there an organic crop report in Iowa? Do we get a rundown of how things have done?
Not really. It's pretty much word of mouth. So before I came on the show, I did caucus a bunch of organic farmers and ask how things were going. And the jury's still out on the harvest. I know conventionally they're saying, oh, it's going to be a bumper year. But I think they're going to change their report, too, because the rains have really impacted harvest. There's a lot of, driving over from Ames today to Iowa City. Everybody's sitting idle because of the wet fields. So
right, a lot of mud.
Right. So, and that's also going to affect transportation. I've heard the rail and river barges are slowed down because of the rain. So it's not turning out to be the best year for corn and soybean. But organically, I'm hearing mixed reports all over the board. It was a cool, wet spring. Everybody had to deal with that. Folks had trouble getting their cover crops terminated on time because of the cool, wet spring. The cover crops didn't grow that well in the spring, so they had to wait a little longer. We didn't terminate ours till June, for example, before we put in our vegetable crops.
Really?
Yeah. And so that late planting definitely can impact your yields. And then in July, we had practically zero rain in Greenfield, our main organic site in the state, while we had, you know, over 10 inches in June and August. and probably that much in September, October so far, which has really been, I've never seen that in 17 years.
Yeah, so. Very unusual. So yeah. As you've caucused the people who you're in touch with, what are some of the crops that were very successful this year?
Well, the veggies themselves hung on. You know, most commercial organic vegetable growers have irrigation. So when we had the dry/drought phase in July, they could turn on their irrigation and push the crop through. Folks that didn't have irrigation were just relying on overhead sprinklers and things like that. I think that hurt the yields. But because of all the rain, there were additional problems, and Richard can probably attest to this or not, with mildew and diseases. He's shaking his head yes. So that, I think, lowered some yields. Tomatoes had a hard time ripening is what I saw, and got a lot of complaints about what's this strange blemish as they were ripening. And I think there was some frost damage early this month, too.
Right, as late as we were with spring and everything was a week or two behind, then we haven't exactly had a late autumn.
Right. So I would put it right at a solid C year. We're definitely going to get yields. It's not a complete wipeout year, but there definitely have been yields, or we've had years where there's higher yields. But I saw beautiful crops of squash, even though I talked to the growers and they said they're not as prolific or bringing in as much weight per squash as usual because of issues of mildew and mold. And tomatoes, I mentioned, were hit and miss. Peppers, we had a really good crop of peppers, so I think they were a little more resistant to diseases. A lot had to do if you could get a disease-resistant or tolerant variety that you were growing for your vegetable crops. And I don't know, do you hear any more, Richard, about how veggie crops came in general?
In general, I think maybe a little bit less than expected just because of the cool, wet weather. They got them in late, basically. And some things just simply don't fruit very nicely when you have cool, wet weather.
Exactly.
Well, and I mean, Kathleen, you mentioned getting stuff in June. That would really set the season behind, I would think.
Right. We ideally want to get in May. You'll have the best yields and harvest then. But, you know, it's amazing how you can catch up with the irrigation.
I was talking a couple of years ago after our summer of just horrific drought. I was talking with Andy Dunham, who farms at Grinnell Heritage Farm, an organic farm right outside of Grinnell. And that year, although so many farmers lost so much, he was talking about how they had a tremendous sweet potato harvest that year, and talking about how the diversity of crops on a farm really gives you not insurance, but at least it gives you different opportunities within the same growing season. While something may fail, something else will probably succeed. It sounds like pretty much everything was down a little this year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, that spreading that risk through diversity is definitely a theme on organic farms. And actually, I don't know if you wanted to segue into the conference, but Andy and Melissa Dunham will be one of the speakers at our conference this year.
Well, sure. And this is the 14th annual Iowa Organic Conference coming up. And one of the focuses of the conference this year is trying to meet demand for organics in Iowa. And so far, demand has really outpaced production in the state, right?
Absolutely.
Give me an idea of how much. What's the difference?
You know, again, there's no tracking of that, unfortunately, by USDA. You know, we're pushing for that kind of information. It really would be helpful if we could get that. But I just base it on what I get calls on. I'm constantly getting emails and calls from folks, buyers that want to get more organic corn, soybean, wheat. And then I hear from local restaurants and institutions that they would like to get more organic produce into their menus, and they can't get enough. There's just not enough producers out there.
Is there a push to start tracking things a little bit better so that we have a better idea of what the numbers are and what the opportunities are?
Right. Yeah, I think so. We're having some folks from USDA RMA come to the conference, and they'll definitely hear that from the growers. And we have been working with USDA, AMS, Ag Marketing Service. And I think by our insisting that we need some more numbers, they did start tracking prices for organic produce. And that's probably been, I would say, 6 years now, and we never had that before. So that has helped, because a lot of times producers, especially new producers, don't know what to charge for their products. So they can go to this website now and see what everybody else in the country is charging.
Well, I can imagine that would be a major challenge. I also imagine while demand may exceed supply, so many organic farmers and producers are selling directly to the customer, they're working in a very small market. So while the big picture is that demand exceeds supply, is there also a challenge of growing the things that your very small marketplace wants?
Exactly. And that's why our emphasis has always been local and organic. We think that we can get a lot more producers selling to local markets. And actually, we're going to have one panel called the Organic Entrepreneurs. And that's local folks who have, in addition to being producers, have also done really well in marketing. Jason Grimm, who's a local farmer here, who sells his black beans, for example. Earl Hefner, who grows his own organic wheat and then processes it into flour and sells it at New Pie Co-op and other places. Gene Mielhau, who does organic popcorn. And Kyle Siak, I think you say his name, local burrito. I haven't met him yet, but maybe you've seen his products at the farmer's market here in Iowa City.
Mm-hmm. And with you run down that list, and I think probably there are a number of people who hear that and think, what, somebody's growing wheat in Iowa? Somebody's growing black beans in Iowa? Every year, do you find, when you get in touch with all of these different growers, are you surprised by the diversity of things that are being grown here?
Yes and no. I don't know if I told you I came from California. That's where I got my
where beer. Everything grows is
exactly.
What we heard, yes.
So I remember the first story Iowa State did on me, and it says, Dellet says everything, we can grow everything here in Iowa, which isn't exactly true. But, you know, I think when I came here 17 years ago, I was somewhat surprised at the limited range of crops being grown by organic farmers. So I really got on the bandwagon to grow, for example, we can grow excellent organic carrots. And I think there was one guy growing carrots when I came here 17 years ago. And now there's a lot. And I know, for example, Andy and Melissa Dunham actually get their carrots into Whole Foods Market, which is really hard to break into. So that's something that they'll be talking about in their session, too.
Now, the conference, as I mentioned, it's the 14th annual Iowa Organic Conference. I suspect it has grown a lot over the last 14 years. Coming up November 16th and 17th. And how do people get involved?
Well, we have a website. If they just Google 2014 Iowa Organic Conference, it'll take you to the website. And we're really fortunate that University of Iowa Office of Sustainability is hosting the website this year. So they're handling the majority of the logistics because the conference is here in Iowa City. And on there, they'll see everything can be done online this year, including vendor sign up and registration.
All right. And we've got a link up on our Facebook page as well. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Kathleen Dellet, ISU Extension Organic Specialist. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me, Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist Kathleen Dellet. And also with me, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And of course, it's time now for your questions. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. This is a great opportunity to ask your in-depth organic questions since we have Kathleen in the studio today. But of course, you can ask questions about all of the different plants in your life. We'll talk about the plants in your garden, in your landscape, in your house, and your trees as well. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. And Richard, just a couple of minutes ago, Kathleen and I were talking about the fact that although spring was late, everything was a week to 2 weeks late all summer long, fall isn't waiting. And
well,
the cooler temperatures.
I think it's pretty normal as far as the the changing of the leaves and the first fall frost. So pretty normal, I think, for the most part.
But if things were delayed, or did most things catch up over the summer?
I think some things didn't catch up. We had, again, very wet weather early on. We had the dry July. We had the cool wet weather in August. So some things, like the tomatoes, they just didn't produce that well. They did produce some, but the quality wasn't there. The quantity wasn't there. And the same thing with some of the squash and other vine crops.
And a lot of people are probably eating a lot of fried green tomatoes or figuring out other
things to do with their tomatoes. They may have to pick
them
and bring them inside and ripen them inside, yes.
Well, and we have frost in the forecast, so now's the time to be thinking about that, right?
Right. If you have some large green, basically mature tomatoes, but they simply haven't ripened, you can pick those, bring them inside. Some people will wrap those in a piece of paper and just put them on the counter or table, and they will ripen hopefully in a week or two.
Okay, so you can still save a few of them trying to cover stuff in your garden at this point?
Well, I kind of think at this point it's time to let them go. it's just time.
There's a season. Turn, right?
And if it was maybe mid-September, I would do it. But basically, we're approaching mid-October, so I might just let them go at this point.
All right. If you have a question, give us a call, 866-780-9100. Let's go to the phones. Dean is on the line in Clear Lake. Hi, Dean.
Hello. I never thought I'd be able to get through.
Oh, well, it's your lucky day.
I've got a beautiful honey locust tree in my backyard that I picked up some pods last fall and have planted seeds from it.
Mm-hmm.
I've got 4 18-inch saplings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering how to winter them. They are currently in pots.
Okay.
They've been outside all summer.
Okay. What I would do is I would dig holes in the ground. I would set the pots in the ground, put soil back around the pots, and that way they'll basically go through winter, and they shouldn't be bothered by the extreme cold. I would also put some chicken wire fencing or hardware cloth around them so the rabbits don't browse on them, and they should be fine. And then next spring, you can dig them up and plant them wherever you want.
Did you say leave them in the pot?
Yeah, leave them in the pot, right.
Okay.
Just dig a hole, set the pots right in the ground, because if you leave the pots above ground level over winter, the cold winter temperatures might damage the root system of the plants or the seedlings.
Sure.
But if you stick them in the ground, the remaining soil moderates the temperature quite a bit.
Okay.
All right, Dean.
I think that'll answer that.
Okay, thanks a lot for your call, Dean. Next up, we've got Ron on the line in Center Point. Hi, Ron.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. My question is similar to the last caller. I'd like to know how to winter over some arborvitae that are 6 to 12 inches tall. And I'll hang up and listen to the answer online. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, basically the same thing. Again, dig a hole in the ground. And I would try to find maybe a protected site, maybe the east side of a building where it has some protection over winter. And just dig a hole, set the pots in the ground, put the soil back around the pots, and they probably should be okay.
All right. You can give us a call with your questions at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Kathleen, earlier you were talking about not getting spring cover crops terminated until a little later than usual. Is now the time when people plant fall cover crops, or is that time already passed?
No, good question. Yeah, absolutely. This is the time to plant. And I'm jealous of my friends out there that have already planted. We hope to get ours planted next week. Again, it's just because of the delays. We're harvesting up to last week in the vegetable fields, and you want to, at least I do, want to get the last fruit or vegetable out before you till the field and plant the cover crops. And you can plant up to, in the past they've said November 15th. I think with the global weather changes, you can, sometimes you can even go into December. It all depends if you can get in the field or not. And the earlier you get it in, chances are you'll have a higher biomass yield, higher production of that cover crop in the spring, which will definitely help add more nutrients to your soil. And in our case, we're doing this organic no-till where we roll the cover crop down with this roller crimper, and you want a lot of biomass before you do that rolling. So We try to get it in as soon as possible, but it's funny, every year it is about this time, October 10th through 15th, that we get our cover crops in.
And what kind of cover crops do you plant?
We traditionally plant a cover crop of rye before soybeans every year in our grain crop rotations. And then in our vegetable crop rotations, we plant a mixture of rye and hairy vetch, which is a legume, to add some nitrogen to the mix.
And for people who have been hearing about cover crops in the last few years but don't quite understand why this is it's really something that's spreading across the state of Iowa in many different kinds of farming operations. What is the benefit of cover crops?
Sure. There are many benefits from cover crops. I'll start with the economic, because now there's a lot of people that are getting funds from the NRCS, Natural Resource Conservation Service, through their EQIP program, Environmental Quality Incentive Program. And by helping improve the soil, cutting down on erosion, adding a natural source of nutrients to your soil, you can get some cost share funds from the NRCS. So folks should visit their local NRCS office and find out about that. In addition to that, it just will hopefully help increase your yields. A lot of times you get mixed reviews on that because either you didn't turn your cover crop down early enough ahead of your crop, sometimes there's some what's called allelopathy, which is an interference between your cover crop and your commercial crop. But in general, you should see a slight yield bump with your cover crop. But the most important thing are the soil quality benefits.
Okay. Let's get back to the phones. Again, you can join the conversation, 866-780-9100. Colin is on the line in Sac City. Hi, Colin.
Good morning. I have a gorgeous elephant ear bulb plant.
Mm-hmm.
It's my understanding I have to take that out. What would you recommend that I do with it?
Well, that's a tender perennial, and basically there's one or two ways that you can do it. If it's in a pot, you can actually bring it inside and treat it like a house plant. Bring it inside and put it in a well-lit window, and it should be fine. Obviously, water it periodically, that type of thing. The other option would be to leave it outside until you've had a killing frost or freeze. And then a few days after that, you cut off the dead debris, and you find that coconut-shaped structure in the ground, and you take that out, and you let it dry for a few days, and then you get a box, and you put a layer of vermiculite, wood shavings, or peat in the bottom. Then you place this structure on top of that, and then bury it in additional material, okay? And then you store the actual container in a dry location where the temperature is typically around 65 to 70.
Right.
And then you would repot that. You would repot that probably sometime maybe in late March or April.
Okay.
All right.
I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for your call, Colin. And next, let's go to Ken on the line in Des Moines, who has a question for Kathleen. Hi, Ken.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
To Kathleen, I'm a new certified organic farmer in New Virginia, Iowa. And I had got a great crop of spring hard red wheat this year. And my question is regarding, too, as far as what's the best way to market it? I have about 200 bushel. And the other point is that I got some friends would like to make some flour from it to see if it would be good for making bread.
Excellent. That's exciting news, Ken. I'm always happy to hear people experimenting with wheat. And, you know, because we're still an infant market here, you're going to have to do some marketing on your own, unfortunately. There's a group called Grain Millers that buys wheat. And then there's a group up in St. Ansgar, Iowa, that buys small grains. So if you get on the web and look for those, or if you send me an email at Iowa State, I can send you some contacts there. They will be at the conference in Iowa City on November 17th, so I encourage you to come, because a lot of farmers do bring grain samples with them and show. We'll probably have 10 buyers there. So it'd be really good if you could do that, because you can find out right away what they would tell you for your wheat if they would accept it and how much they would pay.
That's and, the conference at Iowa, right? University of Iowa?
Yes. It's at the University of Iowa Memorial Union on November 17th. Starts at 8 a.m.
So, okay, I'll be there.
Yeah, it's a really good opportunity to meet the buyers and bring them a sample. And then we'll also have Earl Hefner, as I mentioned, and he grinds his own wheat, makes flour, sells his flour, I know, definitely to New Pioneer Co-op and other places. So you can talk to him firsthand and find out how his market is. I suspect there's room for more. When we grew our wheat out in Greenfield, we ground it too, and I used it and passed it out to a lot of folks to make bread and makes really good pancakes. So I know when you sell it commercially, it has to meet certain specs, falling weight and the weight of the grain itself. And it's a lot more complicated than just grinding your own, because I don't think organic consumers are that fussy. I think they're selling Earl's wheat, for example, at New Pine with no problem. So local markets probably best for flour, grinding your own flour. But come to the conference and you'll be able to talk to these guys firsthand.
All right, Ken, thank you so much for your call. You can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Iowa State University Extension organic specialist Kathleen Dellett. And Kathleen's not on with us nearly as often, so if you are an organic gardener with questions, today is your day. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Let's go next to Catherine on the line in Perry. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. My question's for Richard. A couple of years ago, I planted 3 lilacs and 3 hibiscus, and they're not doing real whoopee well, and I'm wondering a couple of things. One of them is, should I be putting bone meal on them this now, and if so, how much and how? And the other question has to do with one of the lilacs in particular. It's almost 5 feet tall, well, 4.5 feet tall anyway, and its top few, most of its top leaves, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, had a little brown around the edge, you know, just, and the leaves kind of, they just didn't look as healthy.
Well, it's kind of late in the year. I wouldn't be worried too much about that. But as far as them not doing well, you can fertilize. I would probably fertilize early in the spring. And I would use like a 10-10-10. I would just maybe take maybe a half a cup of 10-10-10 and sprinkle that around each plant, mm-hmm. Something of that amount. I wouldn't do anything at this point. They don't probably need specifically a lot of phosphate would be my guess. So I would just go with a balanced fertilizer like a 10-10-10.
Okay. And the brown leaves on the one live plant, do you think it could be fungus?
I don't think so.
Okay.
If we're having kind of a stressful year, mm-hmm. they will sometimes do that.
Okay.
That doesn't mean it's a disease or insect damage, but when they're under stress, sometimes they show the effects late in the summer, early fall.
I see. Thank you.
All right, Catherine, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to Rick on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Rick.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Mine is about using your lawn leaves mulched up and use them for mulch around plants. If that's a good idea. It seems like I heard earlier that they may have some sort of disease or something that they could carry, but instead of paying for bags of mulch this fall, we have tons and tons of leaves. I was wondering if I could just shred those through the mower and put them on down instead of the mulch. So I'll take the answer off here.
Yeah. The fortunate thing is when you're dealing with a disease that may affect a tree or a shrub, most of your plant pathogens are very plant-specific. And something that would affect a tree or shrub is not going to affect, let's say, a tomato plant or a peony plant. So in that regard, you're okay. You can use shredded leaves as a mulch. You can use it as a mulch, for example, in strawberries, in annual flower beds, that type of thing, in the vegetable garden. Now, leaves don't make a good winter mulch as far as protecting plants. So we would not cover, for example, strawberries in the fall with leaves because leaves tend to mat down and that may tend to smother the plants. But as far as a good year-round mulch, I would use them, for example, in the vegetable garden, annual flower bed, basically raspberries, that type of situation.
Okay, thanks a lot for your call. And are there any specific type of tree leaves that are more problematic? Like if you have a lot of walnut trees, does that influence whether you can use those leaves as mulch or not?
Well, the walnuts do contain a compound called juglone that may inhibit the growth of some plants. But if you have a lawn and you have various trees like maples and oaks and lindens and maybe a walnut tree, and so if your leaves are a mix of things, that should be okay. If it were exclusively walnut leaves, I might not use it.
Okay.
So
the squirrels are working to make sure that we are almost exclusively walnut trees.
Okay.
That just changes with each passing year. You can join our conversation. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's a perfect day to get in your questions, particularly if you focus on organic gardening or organic care for plants, because we have our organic specialist here with us today, Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist Kathleen Dellett. Also, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron is here. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa, and we would love for you to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Iowa State University Extension Organic Specialist Kathleen Dellett. And let's go next to Joe on the line in Ames with a question for Kathleen. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I hope this isn't too complicated. I planted this fall in my vegetable garden. I've got about a quarter acre. And I planted a hard red winter wheat and white clover mix. And in the spring, I'd like to till strips to it and plant my vegetables in those tilled areas. And then in July, harvest the wheat, and then in the winter, in the fall, till all that back in and do another cover crop. So my question is, will the fertility be adequate from tilling in that clover and that stubble from the wheat, or am I going to have to amend the soils in addition to that? I'm trying to get away from fertilizers, you know, like chemical fertilizers, and just keep the soil healthy through rotations.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have enough space to leave, like, you know, an eighth of an acre, you know, in cover crop all for like 2 years or something.
Right. Well, that's great. You're doing that system. I have seen that system. I can't say there's a lot of people doing that system in Iowa, but I've definitely seen it around the country. And you might have a problem with harvesting your wheat if you have your vegetables growing there right next to it. Because
well,
it depends how you're harvesting.
I just have a little walk-behind tractor with a sickle bar on the front of it.
Uh-huh. And so that can cut. Okay.
Yeah, I can cut like a 2-foot swath of that wheat, and it just lays down real fine.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have to pick it up by hand, basically, and thresh it by hand.
Okay, and that'd be really interesting to see. And your question about fertility,
right?
It depends on your soils. Definitely get a soil test. Ames soils are pretty fertile from what I've seen in my husband's backyard garden, for example.
Mm-hmm.
He does not need to apply any additional fertilizer. The soil is so rich. However, it is beneficial to the soil to have that crop rotation, to have, like, you have legumes in the system. The clover will add some nitrogen. In our research trials, we are always asked to get optimum or maximum yields. And so in addition to cover crops, we always come back and side dress with compost, and that will produce the highest yields. You can get by with just the cover crops. We've shown that. However, if you want to get higher yields, you can buy a compost at a local farm store, or you can try to find some in your neighborhood. I know there are horse farms and some cattle farms around Ames that you could get the manure from and mix it with straw and create your own compost.
Huh, okay. Well, thanks. And the other thing is, if there's any way to accommodate people who are growing small amounts of wheat and barley to get it threshed, those that would be great to hear too, because that's an awful lot of work if you're just trying to do it by hand.
Mm-hmm.
And the equipment is very expensive unless you inherit it or something.
Right, I agree. Well, I'm again encouraging you to come to the organic conference at Iowa City on November 17th, because Earl Hefner will be there, who grinds his own flour, and he combines it and grinds it, and chances are you could get in on Tim threshing it. And he's in Panora, which is not really that far from Ames, so I always try to hook people up with resources. That's the closest one I can think of.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Joe. And let's go to our next caller. Bob is on the line in Bettendorf. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, hi. I had an exceptional apple crop, four apple trees of different varieties. They're mature trees. First question is there any correlation to the exceptionally cold winter? They just had a ton of blossoms, and I had a ton of apples, of which now I have to, my second question, preserve. I've given away all the apples I can, and I have to preserve them some way. Is there any coating I can put them on to preserve them into the winter?
Really, no. What you're looking for there as far as storing those is a temperature just at or above freezing, let's say 32, 33 degrees. You also want a fairly high humidity so they don't shrivel. So you could put them, if you have boxes, if they're plastic-lined boxes, you could put them in a cool place and they should be fine. If you have a second refrigerator, that might be an option where you put them in that second refrigerator. But the temperature should be around 32, 33 degrees and a fairly high humidity.
And don't you need to make sure they're blemish-free, Richard?
Yeah, you typically would want to sort through those. And those that have some blemishes, use those first and basically store the others in a place that you can find. But if the temperature is, let's say, 45, 50 degrees, they won't keep nearly as long. So you're looking for that temperature just above freezing.
All right, and applesauce for the others, right?
You can do that, yes.
All right, Bob, thank you so much for your call.
You bet.
One of the few people to get a bumper crop of apples this year, I'd say. Barbara's on the line next in Charles City. Hi, Barbara.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is about some heirloom hollyhock seeds that I got from a friend, and I wonder if I should sprinkle them on the ground in the fall, as if the plant itself were dropping the seeds, or how should I handle those?
Okay. You could do it either way. You could do it now and just sprinkle them on the ground. And then what I would do would be to just kind of maybe lightly rake them into the soil, or you could do it next spring too. Either one is fine.
Okay. Would I need to put any covering of leaves or anything over them?
No. Just kind of work them in a little bit into the soil so they're in contact with the soil, they have some moisture, and then they'll typically germinate at the proper time next spring.
Oh, great. Okay, thank you so much.
All right, Barbara, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Susan in Audubon. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have an ornamental grass, a patch of it, just outside my front door. And I would like to move that. I'm going to have some work done on my front steps. Can I move that now? And if I can, what would be the best way to do it?
Okay. As far as the best time to do that would be early spring. That would be the best time to dig them up and move it. Could you do it now? You possibly could. The risk would be that if you did it now, and then we have a really long, hard winter, it may not survive the winter. So I would prefer to do it in the spring, and I would just go out there with a shovel or a spade and dig it up. If it's a well-established plant, it may be a big clump, and you may need some help doing that, but I would simply dig it up early next spring, and if it is a big clump, I would probably take the spade and maybe divide that clump into sections and replant.
Now, what about putting some of the clumps, like, in pots now, and, I don't know, putting them in the garage or bringing them to the basement?
Well, if you're going to do that, I would suggest that you do that as soon as possible and then put them in the pots. And again, I would be inclined to later on in November dig some holes in the ground and set the pots in the ground so that they basically have some protection as far as the cold temperatures on the roots, and they should survive pretty well. When you put them in the garage, sometimes the temperatures vary quite a bit. They may not overwinter very well, and the basement typically would be too warm. So probably just putting them in the ground outside.
Okay. So, and that would be preferable to just setting them where I eventually want them to be at this time of year.
Well, no, if you know exactly where you want to put them, you can dig them up now and put them in there right now if you want. That's fine. I would just probably prefer spring just because you do have that risk that they may winter kill if you do it now.
Okay. All right.
Susan, thank you so much for your call. And you can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. Kathleen had to dash off to a meeting, so thank you very much, Kathleen, for being there today. But Richard is still here to answer your questions. He's not going anywhere.
Not for a while.
866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's a question for you, Richard, from Susan. I'm new to rose bushes and have planted two this summer here in central Iowa. How should I protect them for the harsh winter coming up?
Well, there are many, many roses, and there are some, like the old-fashioned shrub roses, are perfectly winter hardy. They need no winter protection. But then you have things like hybrid teas and floribundas, and they're not nearly as winter hardy. So typically what we suggest is going out probably sometime around mid to late November and taking soil from the garden and simply placing that at the base of the rose and essentially covering, let's say, the bottom 8 to 12 inches of the rose canes with soil. Soil is a very good insulator, and it protects the lower portion of the plant.
All right. And now let's go back to the phones. Janice is on the line in Marion. Hi, Janice.
Hi. I was listening. I'm a faithful listener to your program, and I heard something about a fungus that will get your impatience. And I did have a beautiful crop this summer, nice and lush, and then I noticed there were no blossoms. And then there were no leaves, and I just had these ghostly stems.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if that what struck them.
Probably impatiens downy mildew. It first showed up in Iowa in 2012. It's been in Europe for many years. It's getting widespread in the U.S. And basically what you see is the plants go downhill where they lose their leaves. They stop blooming. They may have a few leaves on the very top of the plant. And so you have these kind of naked little stems, eventually they die completely. Now, when you first get the infection, typically what you can do is check the underside of the foliage, and you have this downy white substance on the lower surface of the leaf. When you see that, you know exactly what you have in patients' downy mildew. And unfortunately, when you have that, it has spores that will overwinter in the soil, and there's no good way to control it. So essentially, if you have that problem, you can no longer plant the common impatiens. You really can't for the foreseeable future.
And the odds are pretty good that that's what it is.
Yeah,
right?
We're seeing more and more of it. Now, on the bright side, there are some other options that we can plant. For example, wax begonias. And the other option would be the New Guinea impatiens. The New Guinea impatiens are resistant or tolerant of the disease. So that would be an option where you can plant those. And I've planted those myself, and they've done very well.
Now, and you are an impatiens guy, right?
I have quite a few, yes, quite a few, over 100. But the New Guineas do best in part shade. They won't bloom very well in heavy shade, but they will do well in part shade. So And nowadays, you can actually buy seeds of New Guinea impatiens. And they used to be grown exclusively by cuttings, but now you can actually buy the seeds.
Excellent. All right. So there is hope on the horizon.
There is hope. Some hope.
That's good. Good to hear. All right. Let's do another email question here. This one is from Josh. He's not ready to let summer go. He says, would it be possible for me to dig up a pepper plant that's about 18 inches tall, pot it, and bring it inside to put it under artificial light?
You could do that, but it's probably not going to be very productive. It will survive. It will grow probably, but I don't think it's going to really do much inside as far as produce fruit.
Okay. This one's from Jana in Omaha. Several of us in Omaha have noticed plants are budding now. Lilacs, peonies, and hydrangeas, to name a few. Will these late buds impact next year's beauty?
Now, I have noticed a few flowering plants bloom in late summer. And I think the reason for that was that we had that dry period in July, and I think some plants went kind of semi-dormant. And then with the rain again in August and September, I had a few flowers on my lilacs in late summer. And sometimes that occurs. I don't think it's going to have a big impact. It was just a few flowers. They probably should be okay.
Okay. Back to the phones. Cheryl is on the line in Des Moines. And Cheryl, our organic specialist left, but Richard can probably help you out. What's your question?
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, we, like many, had blight in our home organic vegetable garden this year. And besides removing all the debris, is there something organically we can do this fall or in the spring to prepare the garden soil for next year?
Yeah, the cleanup is the very most important thing, where you go out there and you pick up that dead debris as much as you possibly can, remove it from the garden and destroy it. It would be nice to go ahead and till it if you can this fall. And then next spring, place everything in a different location. So
right.
Where you had your tomatoes this year, put them in a different location. And
right.
So rotate everything that you can. That's basically the best that you can do.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Cheryl. Thanks a lot for your call. And next, we will go to Rockwell City. Hello, Bob.
Hello. My question is about horseradish. What's the correct way to harvest it and what time of year? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks,
okay.
Bob.
Okay. Horseradish, salsify, parsnips, they develop their best quality late in the year. So we typically want to harvest those around mid to late November. And as far as harvesting them, with the horseradish, once you harvest them, you want to store them in a cool place where the temperature is just above freezing, a fairly high humidity. But make sure they're stored in a dark place, because if they're stored in a place where they get light, the roots will turn green, and that kind of detracts from the quality. So make sure it's cool, fairly moist, but also dark.
All right, and here's a couple is-it-too-late questions for you. This one's from Betty. She says, is it too late to divide and transplant hostas, and would it be better to do this in the spring?
I would definitely do it in spring, because spring is the best time anyway, and right now we're getting kind of late, so I'd prefer to wait until spring. And basically do that as they're just emerging from the ground. They call it kind of the bullet stage, as far as those buds coming out of the ground. That's the ideal time to do it.
Okay, and one more quick one. Is it too late to plant garlic?
I would say no. We typically do plant it in October. And so what you want to do is go ahead and plant it as soon as you can, and then maybe in November cover it with several inches of straw.
All right. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And you're taking next Friday off, right?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, enjoy your week off, but we will be here with Horticulture Day next Friday on Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Lindsay Moon, Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from Jason Burns. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Thank you again for making our fun drive very successful. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a nice weekend.